Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina and Russ Avison right here on LA Talk Radio.
It is another Thursday night. This is LA Talk Radio, and you're listening to The Writer's Block. My name is Jim Christina, and I'm here to just thrill you with all kinds of stories from the unknown. Sitting across from me is the ever elusive,
and Mr.
And
Unknown.
Tonight, he's Russ Avison.
Got it right. I had to go away for 2 months before
you did,
got
before
together.
We got that right. But yeah. We got it right. Thank yeah. you, Ronan, wherever you are. You're in there somewhere. We know. The Writer's Block is brought to you by Black Dog Publishing in Simi Valley, the nice folks at Black Dog. Their number there, if you want to find out any information that you don't know about publishing or writing, give us a call. It's 805-795-3165, and the good folks there will be happy to answer your question, or you can write a question on email at info@blackdogpublishing.co. We're also brought to you by Out West Marketing, or Out West Boutique and Marketing in Newhall, and that's Bobby Jean and Jim Bell. And tonight they are at their concert series. They're having Dennis J there tonight, so they're excited about that, and they're out there in Newhall getting ready for their concert series. And I believe that there's tickets left. You can call 661-347-9700. And they may have some tickets left. If not, just stay tuned right here with us, and we'll just enthrall you with a wonderful evening of conversation. We have a wonderful guest in here tonight, incidentally. Russ, where you been, man? I know you were up in Montana, and
I was in Montana, and I was in Tennessee in the Smoky Mountains.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we were on a photo summit, and I spent 2 days in bed with the flu. Came back for a day, and then went to Montana, and then the night I drove back from Montana, and the night I'm coming back into town,
yeah,
I'm listening to the election returns.
Oh yeah.
Well, yes, and I considered just driving on to Canada.
Yeah. But, well, you would have had to turn around.
Yeah, true.
Otherwise, you could have just driven right on to Mexico.
But I am back.
Well, and it's so nice to have you in the studio again.
Isn't it?
It is. We have such a good time when you're here. Last week, we had your buddy, Richard Polinelli, here.
I know.
It was so much fun. He's such a good guy.
He makes you sound good.
I know. He does.
Yeah.
He's just Richard. In fact, he rode in with me, and I had to hear him all the way in and all the way back out again.
He didn't bring his own horse?
He did not.
Oh, okay.
He did not. Tonight, in studio, we have Kansas City native Rochelle Wisoff.
Wisoff.
Well, hell, I don't know.
Either
Weiss,
one
Wiss,
sounds like kind of a nice thing to say.
And she is a woman of Jewish descent, the granddaughter of Eastern European immigrants, whose close personal connection to Jewish history is a recurring theme throughout much of her writing. Growing up, she was heavily influenced by the Shalom. Okay.
Shalom Aleichem.
Okay. Shalom Aleichem. Stories as well as Fiddler on the Roof, that one I can say. Her novels, Please Say Kaddish for Me and From Stilt and Ashes, were born of her desire to share the darker side of these beloved tales, the history that can be difficult to view, much less embrace. Before becoming an author, Rochelle attended the Kansas City Art Institute, where she studied painting and lithography. Her preferred media are pen and ink, pencil and watercolor, which she uses in her book covers. And I've seen the book covers, and they're wonderful. You buy the book for the covers.
Thank you.
Character studies, and will be used in her upcoming companion coffee table book for the series, A Stone for the Journey. Rochelle's short story, Savant, was published in Voices, Volume 3, The Swimming Lesson in Echoes of the Ozarks, Volume 6, and Reap the Whirlwind in Voices, Volume 4. Two of these are included in her own short story collection with original artwork, This, That, and Sometimes the Other, High Hill Press. She is currently working on the third of her series as One Must, One Can. Please welcome to the Writer's Block, Rochelle Wisoff Fields.
Well, I've never even gotten that kind of intro before with the applause. And
I know.
Yeah.
I'm actually impressed.
I think she's not on there. What? Her microphone. I think you need to turn her on. There
I
we go.
I just turned you on.
Am I live now?
You are.
Much better. Much better.
I say I was impressed with that intro. Wow.
Well, that's why we ask you to write your intro, because we warn you, that's what we use.
Yeah, actually, so, somebody else wrote that for me.
Well, they did good.
Yeah.
You know, as long as they spelled everything correctly.
All right, so tell us why you're in town, because you don't live here.
Right.
Well, had this broadcast scheduled, and I don't have anything but a cell phone, and I was told I needed to use a landline. Plus,
that's
I
a good reason to fly into town.
I know, huh?
Plus, I have a son and daughter-in-law and granddaughter here that I don't get to see that often, and they don't live far from here, so...
Right. Right.
It was a great excuse.
They live in North Hollywood.
Yeah.
In fact, your son
Travis
is sitting
over there in the
right
corner,
here. Yeah. Hi, Travis.
Wait, wave to everybody there. There you go. Good.
Hi, Travis.
They all can see you. So I have to ask, the stories that you've written, the two that you sent, please say Kaddish for me, and which some people don't know what Kaddish is, and that's the traditional poem for the dead.
Yeah, the Kaddish prayer.
The Kaddish?
Well, it's okay, it depends on Ashkenazic Hebrew or Sephardic Hebrew, how it's pronounced.
Okay.
An Israeli friend of mine thought I was mispronouncing it because they would say Kaddish. But the Eastern European call it Kaddish.
That's where I got it. No, that's where I got it too, because my father's, both his parents came from Russia. And,
right.
And there was, we always learned Kaddish.
So that is the prayer that's said in honor of
right,
the dead.
Right. Now, and these books, now I assume because they were part of your family before they immigrated, had been part of the Russian pogroms against the Jews. I assume as far back as it went. And I think they first started, 1822, when the Russians
right.
first started. Because after they got all these territories, they started getting rid of all the Jewish people.
Right. Then they rounded them up into the Pale of Settlement.
Right, which... right. And I believe the last was 1906. Was that? Am I correct in that?
I'm not sure. I know my grandfather came over about that time.
Uh-huh.
But he came from Poland.
Uh-huh.
It really isn't about my family.
Uh-huh.
Because when I started out, I wanted to write something about my grandfather.
Sure.
And nobody knew anything. And he was from Poland, and I found the history in Kishinev in Moldavia much more interesting.
Uh-huh.
Because the Kishinev pogrom of 1903 was the first internationally recognized pogrom.
Uh-huh.
And Theodore Roosevelt tried to get the Tsar to denounce it,
mm-hmm.
which he would not do.
Right. Wow.
Well, for people who don't know what pogrom is, why don't you explain that?
Okay. A pogrom is basically a government-sanctioned massacre.
Right.
Which really, the Holocaust was a series of pogroms.
Mm-hmm.
So the pogroms in Eastern Europe, which people don't realize, were a dress rehearsal for the Holocaust.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they sort of paved the way, and... people think that Hitler just sort of rose out of nowhere, which he didn't. It was, anti-Semitism was rampant.
Yeah, he was certainly a child of his time, that's for sure.
Yeah.
The books, I don't know how much is loosely based on your family, if anything at all, you say. I kind of don't know if I really believe all of that. I think there has to be stories from your family that we got thrown in.
There are.
Yeah.
And I sort of borrowed some names.
Oh. Well, I mean, they're probably, most of them aren't around anymore, so they won't mind.
They're not using them anymore.
Right. They're not using them. Somebody might be, but they're not.
Okay.
Tell us about these two books. Let's go with the okay, I'm going to mispronounce this again.
Please say Kaddish for me.
There you go, Kaddish.
Okay.
Okay. Let's go through that book and kind of go through that, because it was kind of an interesting study of people.
Okay. You want me to talk about the characters?
Yeah, you can just talk about the characters. Just talk about the story. Talk about the characters, where they came from inside you and how you got them on the page.
Okay. Chava, the main character, which Chava was my mother's Hebrew name. So that's where I came up with her name. She is a young girl in Eastern Europe. The book starts with the massacre of her family. And through that first chapter, she recites the Kaddish for her her family and her friends as the village is burning behind her, mm-hmm. because she knows that there won't be anyone left to say it for them. And then she runs through the night through the forest, and it's November, and she's wearing nothing but a nightgown, and collapses on the doorstep of a synagogue in another village where she's taken in by another family. The blind rabbi, Yessel, who was... I picked him up in a shtetl account off the internet, mm-hmm. but I found this man so interesting that he went blind in his middle age and studied into his old age, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. that he never gave up. So I kind of thought, well, this is a great character. And then Chava, through as a result of the frostbite she suffers through that escape, this is something that plagues her through her whole life. But she is a very courageous, she's a survivor.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really what the story is about. And then some of the other characters, it's hard to say where they came from. I mean, it's like you wake up in the middle of the night and it's like, in fact, there was one night I remember we were actually visiting Travis. And I had it in my head that Chava and her husband were going to immigrate to America, that Yessel was going to die in steerage. And then I realized that Chava's adopted mother, Fruma Yael, whose name means pious one, and I borrowed it from a friend of mine who passed away. It's sort of a memorial. I realized that Chava wasn't going to go to America without these people. And I woke up in the middle of the night and went, oh my gosh, Herschel has to die.
You know, Herschel has to die.
This was an epiphany. Fruma Yael was married to Herschel,
mm-hmm.
and she would never leave Svechka, which was their little fictitious village, any other way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of, and these are spoilers. I'm sorry for anybody who hasn't read them, but there's a whole lot more story than what I'm telling.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But when Herschel passes away, then Yessel and Fruma Yael have been friends for years. Mm-hmm. I mean, they've raised each other's children. And so he proposes. And so then they are Chava's parents. And that's kind of how I got them overseas.
Right.
But meanwhile, there's a love story for those who are romantic, which I am, that Chava falls in love with the rabbi's son, who is engaged or betrothed to the cantor's daughter, who just happens to be her adopted sister, which complicates things.
Now, these were arranged marriages, basically,
right.
And which was troubling. To me, it was troubling to hear that. I wanted to stop you and ask you about something. I mean, yes, there is the love story there, and it kind of burns throughout the entire book. But the thing that troubled me the most was the violence. And I don't mean that in a way that, I wasn't offended, but it was very graphic.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, I forgot who it is in the book, says, what can drive men to be this way? And that was a question I was asking as I mm-hmm. was reading about it. Where did that come from? You don't look like anyone that would be violent or have a mean bone in your body. I don't see it.
Yeah, and those were hard things to write. I mean, there was a pogrom scene in there where a family is massacred.
Mm-hmm.
But the more I researched and the more I read, I realized, you know, in Fiddler on the Roof, and I do call those stories the dark side of Fiddler on the Roof,
mm-hmm.
it's a very watered-down story of what really happened. These pogroms, I mean, women were raped, they were ripped open. It was Helter Skelter before Manson. So it's like, first I had to make you care about the characters and then make you care what happened to them. So it had to be violent, it had to be graphic.
Oh, but even the children, I mean, there's some scenes where they're just swinging. I don't want to even go into it, but it was really... It also helped, though, develop the idea with Hava and some of the other characters that, you know, they don't give up. They're fighters. They're survivors. And that was really strong with really almost the whole culture. And anyway, that's what I took away from
it. Right. Well, and that's what I wanted you to take away from it. So, success.
Yay.
He usually gets it.
That's good. I want people to get it.
Yeah. And a lot of people, well, actually, I don't think anybody really understands the depth of the pogroms as they were put forth by the imperial government. Mm-hmm. And it was soldiers and followers, and everybody was in on this. And when they killed, especially when they went after the Jews, they killed everybody. There was nobody left alive. You know, it was a cleansing, I suppose you could probably call it more than anything.
Yeah, and ethnic cleansing, which we don't hear about anymore.
Well, not yet.
I was being facetious.
You had to, when you sat and wrote this book, you had to have been sitting there halfway in tears half the time.
Yes, I was.
Yeah, I can imagine. And I can also imagine you sitting there and waking up in the middle of the night and jotting down things or just trying to remember things when you wake up and then go back to sleep. And you wake up in the morning and you go, oh, damn, it's gone.
Right. You know, I never had the damn it's gone moment.
Really? Boy, I do.
It's like once it
every
was
morning,
there.
Every morning, Jim.
I know, huh?
That was the crazy thing, was once it was there, it was there. I mm-hmm. would first see it as a movie playing out in my head, which mm-hmm. wasn't fun to watch. And then it was like, how do I articulate this?
Mm-hmm.
And, of
mm-hmm.
course, over 12 years, I grew as a writer because when I started, I had no idea where I was going with it.
Sure. You know, and when I found out what these books were about, I had to get into the historical aspect of it, and I had to go back and research the pogroms and find out where they came from and what year they started and what caused them all, and find out which countries were sucked into Russia, Moldavia and Ukraine, and a lot of different countries were made part of Russia.
Right.
And then, of course, they had huge Jewish populations, especially the Eastern European part. There was just ginormous populations there. And you had to have gone through history and really, really, really studied what you were writing about, because that's not an easy subject.
Right. I had a rudimentary knowledge of it growing up, and that's where I got the tailors. My grandfather was a tailor.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother had told me, because of the pogroms, he didn't know his own birth date. He barely knew his family. So, I mean, he came over here, and she said 1903, he hitchhiked from Ellis Island to the Midwest.
Wrong.
So the tailors I kind of base on my grandfather.
Uh-huh.
Is there knowledge, when the pogrom started, there has to be a reason behind picking on, say, the Jewish people for this. What was it about the government that said, okay, these are the ones we're going to go after?
That's a question I can't answer, but it's been going on since the Inquisition.
Well, Russ, I think after doing the reading that I've done and the studying on it, the Russian Imperials, Russia had very few Jews in it at the time, very 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 few Jewish people in Russia proper. So when they got all of this territory to the west, it included almost all Jewish people. And they didn't want to intermingle the Russian population, which was pure, according to them, with the Jewish population. They didn't want to have bastardized citizens. So they made the choice of going into each country and running a pogrom in each country, and they got rid of as many as they could.
Wow.
I know, it's kind of like, it makes you wonder about the National Socialists, because that's what they did. You know, and it's just like, wow. I mean, you know, history does actually repeat itself if you give it half a chance.
Unfortunately, that's true.
Yeah, yeah. And then, anyway, it's such a sad subject. So we're going to move on to your other book, which takes place in the United States.
Okay.
Now, unfortunately, I never got to open the cover on this one. So tell us a little bit about From Silt and Ashes. And that's the same characters.
Right.
Some of the same characters.
Some of the same characters and some new ones. Mm-hmm. I have been accused of way too many characters to keep track of. It's like, well, I'm sorry.
Ask her. She'll tell you. She edits.
But it starts out in Kansas City. Chava and Arl have married. They're expecting their first child. She is having post-traumatic stress with nightmares and acting out. And it's just, you know, I take them through acclimating to Kansas City, but some of my characters go overseas. Mm-hmm. You have Ulrich, the German music professor, and his friend Nikolai, who is a Russian doctor. After what they've seen, they leave Kishinev and go to London. And so I take them on a journey. Well, then part of Arl's family goes to Odessa, Ukraine, which where in 1905 there was another horrendous pogrom.
Right.
And so it kind of takes you through another bloody pogrom.
Hmm.
You like that.
I was just going to say, I'm getting the feeling that you really like writing that stuff.
Not really, but, you know, there's a part of me that says, you know, people need to know this history.
Right, right.
I was told by one agent who turned the books down that it was too much like Fiddler on the Roof and a story that everybody already knew.
Well, nothing like Fiddler on the Roof. A little bloodier than Fiddler on the Roof.
Oh, yeah, and the true history was.
Sure.
I mean, that wedding scene in Fiddler on the Roof, if they had been true to history, would have been bloody and a massacre.
Wow.
I love Fiddler
I'm also going to ask you, it just struck me that the violinist Itzhak, was that Itzhak Perlman that you had in your mind?
No.
Because that's who I thought of when I said he had the violin. Okay.
That was sort of an accident. Originally, the name was Yitzhak with a Y, and it's a Hebrew for he shall laugh. And then somebody told me that I had too many names that were similar, so I took the Y off and made it Yitzhak. And I happen to be a big fan of violin. So it was sort of a happy accident.
Oh, okay.
All right, violin. I could probably plunk a few tunes on a violin if I had to.
Really?
Yeah. You write a lot of names that I mean, us Gentiles probably couldn't pronounce in our best dreams. I struggled with the mother of the gal that took care of her and actually did an amputation on her foot.
Right, Fruma Yael.
Yeah. I couldn't get that.
I get that, and I sort of apologize, but not, because these characters couldn't be named John, Mary.
Peter. I was thinking Doris.
Doris, yeah.
Yeah, you know, Linda.
I'm sorry, Jim, it didn't work that way.
I know, and they're traditional Hebrew names.
Right.
And I'm not a traditional Hebrew, not even a non-traditional Hebrew, so I have no idea. I have a Jewish guy that works for me at work, Mark, the bookie knows him, and he couldn't even pronounce him. And he spent time on a kibbutz in Israel.
Actually, most of the names were Yiddish. Some of the names were Hebrew because I was running out of Yiddish names.
Oh. They don't have a book of Yiddish names you could open?
Actually, they do. I mean,
really?
You can find just about any name on the internet.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
When I was in junior high and high school, I studied German. And my grandmother spoke Yiddish. And German and Yiddish are very similar languages. And I used to be able to sit down and have conversations with my grandmother because the German and Yiddish were so close. And that, but I come from a interfaith family. So my dad, Jewish, my mom was Catholic. And so I was just telling Ronan that I went to a Sunday school for interfaith families. And so we learned both sides. And of course, didn't grow up and cast it all aside. But
right.
but it was really, I think it was a great way to be brought up so that you do learn, you know, the differences and you get both sides. It was great. Right. My grandmother and then her husband, they came, as I said. And, you know, I think it was possibly the Ukraine. And I don't remember if it was a part of Poland that's now Russia or a part of Russia that was Poland. But they came, I believe, through England and then came to Ellis Island from there. And our last name, which must have been changed because Avison is obviously not a Jewish name, but yeah. You go back to England, there's lots of Avisons around. So I think that's kind of how it, you know, the name changed when they came over.
Well, a lot of those names, when they came over to Ellis Island, they couldn't, the concessionaires couldn't spell it, couldn't pronounce it. So it was like, okay, you're Green. And, you know, and a lot of people shortened it.
Right.
Our original family name was Bader or Bader.
Mm-hmm.
But when the family came from Lithuania, you know, it's like one family, one passport. And the passport they were able to get was Wysoski.
Really?
So when they got here, they shortened it to Wysoff. And so I found a lot of relatives on the internet because anybody with that spelling is related.
No kidding.
Oh, wow.
My grandparents had something like 7 or 8 children. So there are a lot of us running around.
Wow. My family's name was changed from Christini to Christina. And they added an H.
Huh.
All right, figure.
Well, so I want to ask you about other writing, because you've done a lot of other things. And then your artwork, too, which is amazing. I was watching Jerry going through the book, and I was really impressed with that. But tell us some about the some of the other writings. It looks like you've done some short stories and...
Yeah, I actually started with a novel, and a friend of mine talked me into going to Ozark Writers League, or we've shortened it to OWL, which is like Arkansas and Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And my first, the word went right out of my head. My protest was, who in the Ozarks is going to be interested in what I write? And they all were.
Really?
And that's how I met my agent, Jeannie. But meanwhile, I wrote some short stories just to kind of get them into these anthologies, which were promoted by OWL. Well, then the publisher of High Hill Press, the president, Lou Turner, emailed me and said, you know, I'd really like to publish a book of your short stories. I had 2 at the time.
Yeah, of course.
So I took a year off from the novel and just wrote about, well, this, that, and sometimes the other is why I called it that, because it was like anything I saw that sparked my interest. And most of them are Jewish-based. I have a lot of Jewish characters. But some of the stories in that book are based on my husband's life, and we're about as opposite as you can get. He's like from a Northeast farm community. So 2 of the stories in This, That, and Sometimes the Other are based on his life.
Hmm. All right, so what got you inspired to begin writing? You said it was about 12 years that you've been writing, is that correct?
Well, I had written poetry. I wrote a play with a friend of mine that takes place during the Holocaust, where a young American couple go back over to Germany to rescue her brother and get caught in the Holocaust. So Please Say Kaddish for Me originally started out to be a prequel, and it became something else, which has nothing to do with the play. And it was like, it took over. I mean, I just was writing all the time. In fact, Travis told me one time, he says, you have that writer's look about you, Mom. I'm like, writer's look? He said, yeah, you're physically here, but your mind's somewhere else.
So Travis, tell me, does she write with wine or coffee? Or tea?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question.
So what do you write with?
Behind closed doors.
Mostly it's in the morning, so...
So it's coffee or
coffee.
Tea.
Coffee. Yes.
Coffee or tea.
Very strong coffee.
I need to break here for just a real quick. I have to do a real quick commercial, and we're going to do an identification and give a number so they can call you if they'd like to. You know, we mentioned Target Freight Management every show, and we mentioned that they have a full truckload service that's the best in the industry. But have we ever mentioned that TFM Truckload is the finest in the industry and gets your freight there every time, on time, at rates you need for your transportation costs? Call today at 1-844-653-7789. Tell them you heard it on the Writer's Block, and they'll have a little something extra for you. And while we're at it, if you are an LTL shipper,
less than a truckload.
There you go. Thanks, Russ. You are probably looking for the best rates with the least hassle. Call Target Freight Management. Their customized transportation management system is just a ticket to getting your freight moved your way. Call Target Freight Management today at 888-653-1323 or go to www.targetfmi.com on the web. Call today. You won't be sorry you did, and I agree with that. We are. We have, of course, Rochelle in the studio with us tonight. If you want to call and talk with her, the number here is 818-602-4929. That is 818-602-4929. Along with your writing, Rochelle, you are also quite an artist.
Thank you.
And I, as I mentioned on the top of the show, you've illustrated your books, the covers. We have them here. They are just absolutely phenomenal. And that's watercolors, I'm going to assume.
Yes.
Okay. Where did you, you went to an institute.
Yeah, the Kansas City Art Institute.
Not an institution, but an institute.
Sometimes it was like an
institution. Yeah, well, okay.
You've ever been around a lot of artists.
Okay, well, I live with one.
Well, then you know.
Oh, incidentally, if you want to call and talk to the bookie, she is here tonight, 818-602-4929. So it's a Kansas City Art Institute.
Right.
How long did you go there?
2 years.
2 years. And were you young, old?
Younger.
Or, you know.
Straight out of high school.
Oh, so that was your first stop.
And really too immature. I should have waited. But I got married straight out of high school, went to college, and honestly, I played hooky more than I spent time in class, and then we spent...
I knew you looked familiar.
Yeah. I have to say that I think we all did.
Right.
Yeah. Freshman year was a party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then we spent, of course, the next 10 years paying off the student loan.
Sure. Sure. But you're quite an artist, and I get the feeling that you love art as much as or more than writing.
They're really on equal footing.
Are they?
And my agent, Jeannie, had a lot to do with the illustrations mm-hmm. that I've been doing. She had suggested that I do character studies and post them on my blog to mm-hmm. generate interest. And this was before we had a contract. And I came up with the idea of doing portraits because there was one character that I wanted to do a blog on, but he was real life and there were no pictures that weren't copyrighted.
Mm-hmm.
So I started doing these portraits. Well, when Jeannie found out, and I have to excuse me, but she has an adorable Southern accent, she said, "Oh my gosh, you're amazing."
Not bad, because we've had her on the show. Actually, why don't you clear this up right now? It's Jeannie who, and she has which agency?
Okay, she's Jeannie Loyacano, and it's Loyacano Literary Agency.
Yes, and she's a good friend of this show. In fact, we have people on from her all the time. So, hi, Jeannie, how are you?
Hi, Jeannie, and I wore the purple shoes.
Did you?
Yes.
Oh, my God, Jeannie, she wore the purple shoes. And a purple shirt.
Yes, well, my blog is called Addicted to Purple.
Oh, well, there you go.
Guess what my favorite color is?
So, purple?
How'd you know?
Oh, I don't know. I just
I'm
pulled it right out.
Jim. Yeah.
I know, huh? I show, you know, flashes of brilliance occasionally. Anyway, back to your art. Your art is really good. And so, do you prefer caricatures, portraits, backgrounds?
I'm really most comfortable with faces, mm-hmm. but lately with the upcoming book, A Stone for the Journey, which will be a companion coffee table book for the trilogy, mm-hmm. I'm sort of stepping out of my comfort zone and doing more scenery and a lot of portraits of the characters. And really that came through the publisher. He copied a letter to me that he wrote to Jeannie saying, "Would Rochelle be interested in doing a coffee table book?" To which I said, "Let me think about it a minute, yes."
Yeah. take over, Russ. I want to check out to her publisher here.
Uh-oh. Now you're in trouble.
WNB.
Yes.
WNB.
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 All right. So while he's
Kernsville, North Carolina.
Oh, you found it.
I did.
Okay. What I wanted to ask you is that, because I'm not a writer, and so I'm always curious as to, first of all, when you went to college, was your goal at that point to become a writer or an artist, or did you not know where you were going? Because you got married right away.
Right. At that stage, I can honestly say I had not a clue where I was going.
Which is pretty usual. I mean,
yeah, well, and I really didn't think I was very smart, which that was kind of the courtesy of a high school guidance counselor, because as we often are when we're immature, we excel in what we enjoy and blow off the rest. So my grade point average was probably, you know, towards the bottom.
Right.
And his advice to me was, you're not college material, so you should either go to trade school or get married.
You know, I can't tell you how many people have told me that over the years. Mm-hmm. That's what their high school counselors told them.
Mm-hmm.
How does a counselor tell you that?
Yeah, I spoke with this counselor one time and one time only.
And he knew you that well?
Yeah.
Now look at you, and for him,
yeah,
exactly. I've said the same thing myself.
Oh, good. Well, right, I bet so you said it a little worse.
So you didn't know what you wanted to do. Was there something in your mind that kept tugging you and saying, "I want to write," or did you always know you had that ability to sit down and do it?
Honestly, I didn't. Towards my 30s. Going through some tough times, I started writing poetry just as kind of a journal, you know, getting my feelings out. I'd always done well, like with essays and stories in school, but I never really saw myself as a writer. It was one of those crazy things, you know. I used to detach to kind of, you know, when there were bad situations, I would just sort of go inside my head and recreate television programs and, you know, kind of rewrite them in my head. Well, before the novel, I got into fan fiction. I was a big MASH fan.
Oh, yes.
And I thought it was really strange that nothing traumatic in my life was going on, but yet I'm crawling inside my head and I'm seeing these stories. And someone suggested I write fan fiction. Well, some of the stuff that I'd found online was ridiculous. You know, had Hawkeye and Margaret watching VHS and eating granola bars in the 50s.
I think I read that.
Yeah. So I wrote two MASH short stories that were novellas when I finished them. And then I realized I can tell a story, you know, beginning, middle, and end with an arc. And they're online, they're under a pseudonym, and I wouldn't even tell you where they were because the writing is pretty amateurish.
Mm-hmm. But that was your beginning stages.
Yeah, and that catapulted me, and after that it was like I was constantly writing. What do I write about next?
What was your first published work?
Savant, which was in the Echoes of the Ozarks.
And how did you feel when that happened?
I was working at the time. I've since retired. But the first time I saw my name in print in a book, I was out of commission for the day. My boss even was go home, you're not here.
Wow. What were you doing? What kind of work did you do?
At that point, I was a cake decorator.
Oh, very closely related.
I did signs for a grocery store and cake decorating, so.
Well, there was some writing there.
Yeah.
Jim, what was it like when you had your first publication?
Did I dance? I think I did. I was pretty stoked, you know, you get your first box of books.
Yeah.
You know, and they have your name on them, and you open them up, and it's what words that you put down.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's kind of cool.
It's an amazing feeling.
It makes you want to go to number two.
Yeah, it does.
It really does.
And I assume you mean writing the book number
yeah,
two.
Book okay. Number two, Russ.
I just wanted to make sure we were clear on that.
You know, you can't take him anywhere.
I see that.
You're getting the picture, right? No, you're not. Here.
I want to ask you, do you at night
This is the bookie, incidentally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In your mind, do you just lay awake and things just roll through your mind all night long and picture things and you can't turn your mind off?
Yes. And my way of dealing with that is I go to bed with the television on. Mm. Just white noise, a video that I've seen 100 times. Because contrary to what the experts tell you about not sleeping with the television yeah. on, it's like crawl inside my head and see what's going on.
Yeah, exactly.
When I do that, though, I automatically start dreaming about the program that's on. You still get that infusion of noise, and all of a sudden you understand what it is, and it's like Law and Order, and all of a sudden you find yourself in a Law and Order episode. You go, wow, this is kind of cool. Okay.
Do you, if you don't have the television on, Jim, do you dream a lot and then remember your dreams?
I remember most of them.
Do you?
Yeah.
Rochelle, do you?
Not lately. I've had a few recently, though, like towards early morning where I'll wake up and it's like, whoa, that was real.
Interesting. Because I'm not one. Like, I can go to sleep. I mean, literally, if we had a 2-minute commercial break, I could probably take a small nap. I'm serious. I can sleep that easily. But I dream so vividly. And in the mornings, I'll wake up, I'll tell Karen a dream, and she just looks at me and she says, loony bin.
I just recorded a dream to Jerry the other mm-hmm. day. She's looking, she's shrugging her shoulders. She's going, I don't know, I didn't listen.
Yeah, right.
What do I care?
Yeah.
It's your dream.
But I wonder sometimes if that's where the inspiration for some of the writing come from. Because, I mean, I have some amazing dreams. I wake up, wow, that was great.
Probably.
But 30 or 40 minutes later, it seems like they just disappear. I don't remember them then. But at the time, I thought, this could be something amazing. People would love this.
Yeah,
I would love this to go through it again.
Yeah. I've had that happen. And then it's like, what was it again that I dreamed?
Mm-hmm.
It was good. I remember that.
Well, sometimes you just take your dream and you adapt it to what you're writing. Like right now I'm in the middle of a book, and I just actually added some stuff I dreamt about 2 weeks ago.
Ah, okay.
So it's kind of cool. But it's conversation mostly. You know, it's just like conversations that you hear in your dreams or conversations that you hear. And you go, wow, this character would be really cool saying that. You know, so you add
it. That's Jerry whispering to you in the middle of the night.
No, I doubt it.
Rochelle, is writing work for you?
No, it hasn't become work yet. It's a passion.
So you look forward to sitting down and doing your writing. And you said you usually write in the mornings. Do you write every day?
No, there are mornings that I don't.
Mm-hmm.
But I do a lot of reading because I host a blog challenge called Friday Fictioneers.
Oh, I looked at some of the writings and very small, short.
They're
100-word
flash mm-hmm. fictions. I put a photo prompt up, and everybody that participates has to write a story that goes with that prompt. And the way that started was thanks to Facebook and Ozarks Writers League. I asked how I could join. And 6 months later, the gal that was doing it, who had created it, decided to step down. And it was like, I can't lose this. This is so much, it's done so much for my writing, because writing a whole story, beginning, middle, and end in 100 words, teaches you what words are important and what words you can
get rid of. Yeah.
And as a result of that, though, I have an audience in the UK and Australia and India that are buying my books.
That's amazing.
It is amazing.
And you know what you said about doing the whole story in 100 words? Somebody made a joke with me the other day, is that, you know how most people will watch television and they have the TiVo or whatever so they can zoom through the commercials? I watch the commercials because I'm fascinated at the fact that in 30 seconds you can tell an entire story. So I understand that, but from writing, but the same thing is very interesting, that you can grab someone's attention, make them think about something, bring it to a conclusion, and do it that quickly.
Right. And a lot of my flash fictions are historical fiction, and that's where I do a lot of research on those, and a lot of Jewish stories as well, a lot of Holocaust mm-hmm. genres. There are a lot of unsung heroes who I've never heard of.
They're still finding out that there were people that escorted the Jews into different countries underneath the Nazis' nose.
Yeah. They're amazing stories.
Yeah, yeah, it truly, truly is. Have you ever had writer's block?
Yeah, I told a friend of mine I had writer's block, and he said, yeah, it was the longest 20 minutes of your life, right?
Bobby Jean, who is our host as well, threatens that she's going to go through all of the shows for the last 18 months, and she's going to pull out every answer that, because we ask that question every week, and she's going to pull out every answer, and she's going to make a book out of them, because there's some great answers, and that's a great answer. That's the longest 20 minutes.
It's actually hijacked from Heinlein, but he confessed to me this morning, and I thought it was original with you.
But, Joe, it's interesting how many times the authors will say, no, I don't think I've ever had
that happen. I know. We've had about 25% say, I've never had writer's block.
I did.
You did what?
Had writer's block.
When?
For 40 years I had writer's
block. Oh, with your book? The Pumpkin and the Snowman?
Yeah, and the Scarecrow.
Oh, Scarecrow.
You didn't listen either.
I published it. I should know what it is. It's The Pumpkin and the Scarecrow.
Do you ever feel like when you're sitting and writing that you're just writing and writing and writing, and you've got to get it done. You've got to get it done because you need to go on to something else and just get it over with. Do you ever have that feeling?
No.
So you're a person with a lot of patience.
I suppose so. I never thought of myself.
Wait a minute, Travis.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
This is your mother now. You'll be able to tell us if she's lying or not.
Is there patience in this woman's life?
I live with her now.
Diplomatic.
She had three boys.
Oh, then she had a lot.
And you all lived.
Then you all had a lot.
She
of
let
patience,
you all live. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well. Yeah. They were a challenge when they were small. But.
And he doesn't look like he has any deformities from being hit or pummeled around the head.
So. He's probably got wooden spoon marks on his butt. But other than that,
made sure that the marks didn't show.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I had one other question. Getting back to your blog for just a minute, when you have the stories, that the 100-word stories that are written about the picture, and the one that stuck in my mind that I read was about the barbed wire in the back of the truck. I don't know if you recall that one or not, and it had to do with getting the kid asked about it and why it was in the back of the truck, and his dad says it's because of that woman's dog that's been harassing our cows. Do you recall that at all? And the kid says, well, maybe it wasn't, it wasn't the dogs. Maybe it was a fox. And no, and he was, and the whole story was that he was very much had a problem with the woman. It was nothing about the dogs, but this was what he did. But anyway, what I wanted to ask you, are these stories, do like lots of people submit them and then you choose which one you want to publish on the blog?
No, because they're not actually published on my blog. I provide a link and the photo prompt. And then everybody writes their own story on their own blog.
Oh.
So we have a link, and people go to the different blogs, and if they want to, they comment. And they'll comment on mine, or they'll like them.
Hmm. So the ones that are on that blog are yours, the ones that you've written?
Right.
And you don't remember this one?
Are you sure you read mine?
Yeah. I mean, I went to the site, and there were photographs. There was a boat, and then there was this barbed wire in the back of the truck, and you also, there was credit given to the people who sent in the different pictures,
right?
And you thanked each one of them, and there was a little story under each one of the
Russ,
the pictures.
Maybe she was the woman with the dog.
Oh, that might be.
You know, I've written almost 200 of those in 4 years.
Oh, holy crap!
That's a lot.
That's a lot of patience.
Well, you know what? We need to start rounding this up.
This
has flown by. It's been a fun hour. Why don't you let our listeners know where they can reach you, and email address, blog, website? I was on your website, incidentally. It's very nice.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
It needs to be updated desperately, but my email address is runtshell, runtshell, @gmail.com. The website is rochellewordart.com. And then the blog site you can Google Addicted to Purple, and it will take you right there.
What a surprise.
But it is also Rochelle Wisoff Fields, all one word, at wordpress.com.
Very cool. Thank you so much. It's been an honor having you here.
Thank you.
Purple and all.
Thank you.
And it's just been wonderful having you in the studio, and it's just great talking to you. Next week, we're on Thanksgiving. We're off, which is nice, and we're going to be back on December 1st with Michael
Sprankle,
who's a writer.
I would change my name if I had.
Well, I'm not going to say that because he's going to be on the air on December 1st. He wrote a couple books, Love and Theft. Actually, he's written more than two. Love and Theft and Once Upon a Time in New York are the ones that he wants us to focus on. And again, Rochelle, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Trust me. And we will be back after Thanksgiving. And we hope you all had a great week. And thanks for listening. And we are going to be out of here in about 1, 2, 3 seconds.